All right. We have got such a phenomenal lineup today. This conversation goes back 30 years with an organization that RealCom has been working with, MIT.
We go back years with MIT I think back to the days, Jim, of Michael Joroff. This is close to 20 years ago, and have always been fascinated with the vision and the level of innovation coming out of MIT's real estate organization. So with that, I've introduced James Scott, resident innovator in residence at MIT, very active in IREM, Institute of Real Estate Management. And James, a pleasure having you on today. Why don't you take a couple of minutes and tell us a little bit about your background and
sure.
kind of your perspective on real estate.
Thanks so much, Howard, and thanks so much, Jim. I've kind of a strange, interesting background. As you can hear from my accent, I'm not a local to the US. I originally from Ireland. I had an earlier career there as a lawyer for many years, and then came over to found myself in Boston about 6 years ago, and I did the program at MIT, the Masters in Real Estate Development and Finance. And through that, I met a couple of incredible individuals, primarily be it Professor Dennis Frenchman, Dr. Andrea Chagou, and Steve Weichel, I mean, who are all kind of like household names in this area. And what they were doing at the time is they had discovered, what they were seeing was this new vision of real estate technology really kind of cementing itself coming out of the great financial crisis. And what they did was they set up a thing called the Real Estate Innovation Lab, with the idea being behind it to really merge the Center of Real Estate at MIT with the technological kind of capabilities and the research capabilities that MIT, you know, is so kind of synonymous and famous for. And through that, we've led, you know what I mean, a vast number of projects with our industry partners. And I found myself in the position, working from there from day one, and found myself now as the lead researcher there, working on a number of different initiatives. Through that, I also hold the position of innovator in residence with IREM. You know, as a lot of your listenership will know, IREM is, one of the main property management cohorts here in the US with 20,000 members across the US and in Canada and Japan. And, what I do for them is a little bit less, more so on the academic side, which is what I work with at MIT. But what I do is I really try to facilitate their membership on understanding all of the new products and technologies that can really facilitate the property management on the property managers on the ground today. So between MIT and my position with IREM, I get to see all of the new tech. I get to see all of the cool stuff. I get to kind of have a little bit of a glimpse around the corner of tomorrow's world and really kind of get myself, I find myself in a very privileged position where I get to see and find out, what's going on and what really is going to make the big differences across the built environment.
I see we can get Jim back.
Yeah, Howard, why don't you stay on in case we still have technical problems. Can you guys hear me okay?
Yeah, perfect.
I was hearing a really bad delay. I would hear myself talk 15 seconds after I talked, and it was just not going to work.
So. Oh, that'll drive you nuts. Yeah.
Why don't you stay on with us, Howard? I think it'll be a good three-way conversation. So what I was saying is our relationship with MIT goes back 15, 20, maybe even 25 years. Howard, I remember the name of the individual.
It's Mike Joroff.
Michael Joroff. Thank you very much. we brought Michael in remotely to our conference in Dubai in 2008. And then, of course, Wade Berner, who's leading up the smart building initiatives for the MIT campus. So, James, the conversation continues with MIT, and thank you for being here.
No, my pleasure. I'm a massive fan of RealCom. I have since the first time that I attended your conference, and it's great to talk to you guys.
So, like we were chatting this week, I'm preparing for today. MIT global reputation. Top three, I would say.
Hold on.
Number one, yes, you're in the top three. Yes, the IIT might argue with you, but I still think MIT.
I'm just being bold.
But I have been reading MIT briefs and documents almost my whole career. Give us an idea, not real estate tech related. What are the big things coming out of the labs these days?
Oh, not real estate tech related. Okay.
Not real estate, just the big one, other stuff.
Oh, that's a great question. Well, I think, certainly out of Sloan, we're seeing a huge amount of money and, how will I put it, intrigue into this new world that blockchain has developed. you know, blockchain, we've all been hearing how it's going to affect the world over the last, let's say, 10 years since it's, you know, first came out. But with the obviously the huge increase in valuations of you know, Bitcoin and other NFTs, non-fungible tokens, you know, people are really starting to look at that and see, you know, is there a really way to utilize this and make a kind of real business sense with that technology? So we're seeing an awful lot of that out of Sloan. Out of the kind of, you know, MIT Central, as I call it, you know, it's always developing new, incredible and crazy things, especially in the material side. Mm-hmm. I love that we have the new Nano Lab, you know, which is probably one of the most expensive, you know, kind of building that's ever been designed at MIT, certainly in any campus, for, you know, which is really going to be the kind of the catalyst with nanotechnology over the next kind of 10 to 20 years. And seeing what kind of initiatives that they're trying to create out of that is really interesting. So for me, you know, I always concentrate on things that affect the built environment. So I love looking at the stuff that in relation to like graphene and borophene, even the next evolution of graphene, which is, you know, even stronger again. But then one of my favorite ones is transparent aluminum. I mean, this is this crazy idea, like that kind of, I don't know if you ever are you into Star Trek, but Star Trek 4, where they came to Earth, you know what I mean, in our own time, and they had to take the whales back in this huge aquarium. That's that idea of transparent aluminum that, you know, a lot of people think maybe that concept was even developed from that movie. They're starting to develop that now, you know what I mean, out of certain sections of MIT. So it's really, really fantastic. Obviously, the Media Lab is just, you know, it's a special place where some of the most incredible innovations and conceptual design concepts that we're seeing, you know, over the last 20 years, it's gone to a whole other level there. Yeah. You know what I mean? And, you know, every person that works in the Media Lab is more of a celebrity and rock star than they are anything else.
You think we could someday get you to walk around with a phone or an iPad and give us a tour of some of the cool stuff?
We actually do that in our class, myself and Andrea. We do it at full, like, I mean, now we haven't been able to do it this year because we're not on now campus. But what we do is we do give a tour of the Media Lab and all of the kind of the cool technologies that are coming out of there. We've been very grateful that everyone within the cohort kind of, you know, really looks after us and make sure that we get, you know, have a good understanding for the students. So it's
damn. I want to see the Transformer building where you take a matchbox and it turns into a 100-story.
I want to see the hypercells.
Yeah, the hypercells. One of our favorite, just for everyone who doesn't know what that is, it's essentially like, I mean, these little tiny shape-shifting robotic cubes that, you know, they're only maybe about, you know, the size of your fist. And what they can do is they can shift, you know, by shifting their internal weight, they morph into spheres and then come together and communicate with each other. And what they do, you know, with that, you know, with a computer chip inside, is that if you have, you know, hundreds of thousands of these, you know what I mean, you have like a thing called, you know, swarm robotics, which allows all of these to come together and communicate with each other. And that really has the potential to create a thing or this idea of a robotic moving building or a shape-shifting space, you know, where, you know, the vision is what we would have is something that could curate probably something, you know, the highest and best use at all particular times, taking that sticky illiquidity out of a building that we've always had to deal with over the, you know, the course of history.
Well, when it extends past its natural good use, you just click a button and it morphs into something else.
Exactly. How incredible would that be?
All right. So we've had a little fun. Now, over the last, you know, couple conversations, we've really, the three of us have been delving into the idea that there's been real estate technology around for a long time, right? 30, 35, 40 years, going all the way back to basic building automation, Johnson Controls, Yardi starting its enterprise platform, you know, 35 years ago. You've seen some crazy good stuff in prop tech over the last 5+ years. Mm-hmm. But I think we all agree that for all these good ideas that are out there over a long time, they're not getting adopted at the speed they should. Any ideas as to what's holding our industry back from 5, 10, 15, 20 years of great ideas?
Okay. This is where I'm going to get into trouble. Okay, because I have an opinion on this.
That's good. We like trouble.
Yeah. I'm going to get a couple of strongly worded letters and emails in the post next week, as I usually do. First and foremost, fear. Most of the world of real estate is not made up of C-suite executives. It's made up of property managers. It's made up of brokers. It's made up of people who, you know, their entire job is mostly made up of a network of communicating with individuals on a one-to-one basis. And for them, you know what I mean, they're not really into tech to begin with. And then you actually, you mentioned a couple of things like AI, and you mentioned a couple of things like data science, and you know, their eyes roll to the back of their head and they go, you know, I mean, that's for the IT guy back at the office. Or you mention AI and they kind of think, you know, I mean, oh, is that going to take my job? And there's a little bit standoffish with it. But hopefully, I'm going to say hopefully, but hopefully the last 18 months, one good thing that might have come out of the horrendous situation that was COVID is that maybe, you know, I mean, that adoption has where people are looking at it a little bit differently. And what I mean by that is because of the incredible, we'll call it probably the greatest social experiment that has ever been taken place with everyone having to work from home, is that people had to become mobile. They had to absorb a number of different technologies, even at its simplest, be it Zoom communication or Microsoft Teams or whatever that was. And they've realized that technology is not an inhibitor. They've realized it's not going to take their job. What it is, it's actually going to enhance their job. It's going to make them far more efficient, and it's going to actually make their job far, far easier. Because the incredible thing about automation is when it really excels is when you take a task, and it's very specific to any task that's repeatable and monotonous and generally very boring. And what it does is it takes the monotony out of that. It does it automatically for you so that you do not have to do that over and over again.
I'm going to give you two more examples. 2004 yeah. In Tokyo, at lunch with a bunch of folks, we're on a building tour trip, and the gal comes out with a little hand device to take our order, right, mm-hmm. from the table. That was 2004. I'm just seeing it into scale practice in the United States in the last 2 years. So let's call that a 15-year delay in getting that basic technology out there. Realcom 2003, talking to somebody from South Africa, he took his phone, he said, watch this, Jim, I can turn my bank account on and off from my cell phone. Okay, he turned it off, he tried to check out, Miguel said, your account's not working. He turned around, smiled, and he goes, watch this, click the button. She goes, oh, it's working now. Okay, South Africa, Japan, 15 plus years ago, compared to adoption in the United States. Could you ever get MIT to do a study as to psychological adoption schedules, if you will, of cultures around the world?
100%. But here's the thing, you're talking to someone who came from Europe. So coming to America, even simple things like the financial system, people still use checks. Like, come on, are you serious? And that's not just me paying my rent. That goes across the commercial industry as well. And you're kind of going, this is insane. Now, I know the likes of, you know, Venmo has kind of is starting to kind of creep in, but payment systems that should be, you know, within, you know, for paying rent or for, you know, for.
So do we all agree, before we take a break, do we all agree that the technologists are there, the capital's there, the ideas are there, they're bustling at the seams, and yet there still is a natural resistance in our industry to going through automation?
Yeah. I would say that there's two aspects to that. One is real estate in itself is an interesting industry in that a lot of people within it have been there so long and they wonder why, you know, if it ain't broken, why fix it? Right. And then what that leads to is this, you know, that incredible social kind of dynamic of operational organizational change. And that in itself are two of the biggest issues that, you know, real estate tech has had, to try and drive a lot of these products into different companies. You know, and, you know, the incredible person of, it doesn't matter, you know, if you're working in finance or if you're working in property management or whatever it is, all of these technologies are fundamentally based on data and the implementation of data. And if you don't have the team working with that data and behind that data to implement it within the system, you're not going to get the efficiencies that are going to that it's supposed to provide. Right. So you need to have everybody on board within the you know, from the top down right down to the guy, the boots on the ground. If everybody's not involved, these technologies don't work. But and in saying that, that gives a lot of the naysayers or the skeptics, what that does, it gives them a get out of jail free card. Because if they're not involved, all they have to do is just not implement the data that they're supposed to. And you know what? It's not working the way it's supposed to. This is a rubbish technology. It doesn't work. Yeah. Why did we bother spending the money?
All right. When we come back, we're going to talk about a couple prop tech innovations that you're excited about and then some Monday morning advice. Howard, if you want to come back, you're more than welcome. If you want to get ready for the news, up to you. But let's take a brief commercial, and then we will be back in a few seconds. James, before we go on to the questions I was going to pose to you, we got a question from one of our audience or a statement commenting about the payment process, automation of the electronic payment process. And he brought the idea that it could be regulatory agencies that are woefully behind. Any thoughts on the stick, if you will, or you know the resistance that's created by policies that are, you know, decades behind?
Yes, that they, you know, regulatory issues is obviously going to be one of the catalysts for stopping change if it's there. But I don't necessarily believe that it is regulatory. I do think, you know what I mean, it's a lot of banking systems. How will I put this? 2008 changed a lot of things with banks. And, you know, it's not just regulations. It's their own willingness to take risks. They don't do it anymore. However, you know, the fintech revolution, which is probably the real driving force behind this, has nothing to do with real estate technology. It's fintech. You know what I mean? It is driving that forward. And, you know what I mean? We are seeing the great example for a lot of the banks here in the US is what's taking place in Europe and what they've been driving force. But really, actually, the really interesting one is what's taking place in Canada. Canada have actually been driving this force as well, like, I mean, with payment systems, especially for the real estate companies. And, you know, it's once the system is in place, it's kind of like it's going to become matter of fact. It's going to become day to day. And people, like, I mean, you know, as soon as it's like using Venmo now. It's like, you know, it's simple. You just, you know what I mean? You just tap a button and you make it work, obviously with all of the right security protocols in place. Whether or not it's going to be based off something like blockchain or whether it's going to, you know, something along those lines, you know, remains to be seen whether that technology is advanced enough to make that happen. I'm not sure in the next couple of years, but I do believe that we just need the financial companies to really drive this forward themselves, because I think that they would get an awful lot more value out of it as well, you know, with when it comes to efficiency.
I do think, though, and hopefully we'll bring this topic back on RealCom Live, is the psychology of change as it relates to innovation. And I do think that we watch innovation being adopted differently around the world. You know, maybe it's emerging cultures don't have anything to undo. They're starting from scratch. It's easier. Here we have to undo things. But I do want to come back at some point, you know, maybe have you on with some clinical psychologists or, you know, people who study history, because I do think that the technology's there, the capital's there, the pace of the innovation, if we could get to that science and figure it out, I think it may help us understand why we're a little slower.
I'll also add to it as well. The real estate industry is completely, it's a completely different animal. And if you think of the people that are involved in it, they see so many fads in so many different aspects of the industry over the course of the life cycle or the real estate cycle as well. And so it's very hard to make, based on that alone, it's very hard to make change. Also, unlike all of the other industries that we're talking about, like let's say REITs, you know, fintech or in the banking industry or e-commerce or even social media, things like that, with the large kind of players that are there, they have this new wave of money where they're able to take huge amounts of money and put them into R&D projects, and it might work and it might not work, and if it doesn't, it doesn't. But the payoff, if it does work, is so great that they're willing to take the chance.
Right.
Real estate, it doesn't work like that. You're only as good as your last performance, and if you fail, that's your career, that's your reputation, that's everything gone. You know, we don't rely on
fail a lot of fast and often.
Yeah, it doesn't work like that. It's a win-win-win, and if you fail, it's over, it's gone. So you know, it's completely different to the VC idea of, you know what I mean, fail, and
I
win.
I think that's an important point. Culturally, that's a very important point. I don't want to run out of time. We only got 3 minutes, so I'm going to force you. We got to answer these real quick. We got a great question from Robert Lee. Do you think cyber and all the things that are going on in the news are going to slow down adoption of innovation? Quick answer, yes, no, or maybe.
Sorry, say that again. What's going to slow down?
With all the cybersecurity breaches and everything that's been going on, do you think that's going to slow down the adoption of data-driven or prop tech in general? Because we're playing defense these days.
No, but it is where I hope regulation is able to step in, especially with data and data privacy. I think that's an important aspect that is, I don't want to say a little, it is a little behind here in the US and compared to other parts of the globe. And it's a very, very important thing because it's going to become more important with the likes of, you know, the evolution of, you know, the Internet of Things and what, you know, that this next evolution of smart buildings, which will be the digital twin. So it's going to be very, very, very important that's looked at. I think the expression is the juice worth the squeeze. All right. You know, I mean, the juice is worth the squeeze on this. Like, I mean, for that to get it wrong a couple of times, because the efficiencies and what we're going to garner from this is too valuable for us to not move it forward.
Okay, we only got 2 more minutes. I'm going to really fast. Give me the top, not companies, but the top three technologies in the prop tech world you're getting excited about?
I just kind of mentioned my favorite one, and I know I've been going on for a couple of years, but there's no greater general purpose technology out there at the minute that's going to have a bigger effect on the built environment than digital twin, because it's going to encompass so many different aspects of the real estate sphere. And primarily, the most importantly, it's going to be like property and asset management. And for those, quick explanation what a digital twin is. If you kind of think of, for those of you who've seen like a BIM model of a building, BIM outline or schematic, well, think of that digital representation of the building, but being in live mode. So all of the different sensors, all of the IoT sensors within it, be it relation to energy usage, HVAC usage, the people within it, space utilization, heating, the cooling, everything within that. And then all of that coming together with the past and present data to give you this up to the minute picture of what's taking place within your building. Well, that's a complete game changer. And then from that, what you're able to do is you're able to actually run forecasting models and scenario sequencing to really kind of understand what you can do with the building without having to go through the cost of actually doing it. Well, I agree.
I think the aggregation of comprehensive data and the potential visualization of that data in a live format, game changer. We are out of time, but I do want you to answer this last question. Monday morning, somebody kind of getting into the prop tech world for the first time, maybe a company a little hesitant. Give me 60 seconds worth of advice. You're on the 20th floor. You got 60 seconds. What advice do you give them Monday morning as it relates to getting into the prop tech world?
Are you talking about investing in it or actually purchasing
it? No, as an owner-operator.
As an owner-operator. Very simple. Educate yourself. And I don't want to sound condescending as that someone like me in any way, but what I mean by that is so many people within the real estate sphere, they know their game like nobody else. They can tell you the costings of construction. They can tell you the costings of a price per square foot. And better than any data source out there. But what they don't do is the minute you mention technology to themselves, they think about the IT guy downstairs that fixes their computer. They think about that and it just brushes over their head. Going forward, and no one's asking you to be a data scientist. No one's asking you to try and write code, but try and figure out all of the vocabulary to educate yourself on what these things mean so that you can actually make decisions on them and understand what people are doing. So
very
that when
good.
There is, and when you see this, when you hear these words like open API, what does that mean? Understand what it means, figure it out, find out what it means so you can actually have the conversation with the IT guy and all of the people that are now making the decisions on this to see if it's appropriate for you and does it make sense for you to actually implement things like that within your own portfolio.
Understand, if I'm hearing you correctly, learn the language.
That's exactly it. Because and don't have it just kind of wave over you or brush over you and just so you understand exactly what people are talking about.
Well, you can tell by the fact that I'm rushing you that we're running out of time. We're going to have you back. I really like the idea of doing it remote from the lab or someplace at MIT, maybe one of your classes, where you get your students involved live there. We can do it. So we're going to get back to you and hopefully you'll find some time to come back on and continue this conversation because I really love the work you're doing with the MIT Innovation Lab and MIT in general. So thank you for making the time this morning and we will be back in touch.
Super. Thanks, Jim. Thanks.
Have a great day. All right. With that, we are going to bring Howard Berger back, and he's going to do the news. Thanks for filling in as we started.
No problem.
We're getting much better, smooth at covering for each other, right?
Yeah, I think it worked out. So thanks, Jim, and thanks, James Scott. Pleasure having you on. What a great conversation. So I'm going to fly through this. Every week, we highlight a few stories from our weekly news briefing. It's released Thursdays. 11 a.m. Pacific. So our lead article this week is by Jim Young. And the world's emerging from a hibernation, or kind of quasi-hibernation caused by the global pandemic, one of the most disruptive events in modern history. So what happened to commercial and corporate real estate and prop tech during this hibernation? So we watched how the biggest work and shop from home experiment in the history of mankind took 20 years of a digital transformation trend line and shot it straight up. Even the most resistant executives succumb to the from home movement. So over time, come back to the office or work from anywhere has become a common mantra. Exactly where's been the innovation we were looking for? So we think with people largely absent from buildings, a lot of companies took the downtime. They revisited their IT, their smart building initiatives, actually got a lot of longstanding projects off the to-do list, focused on tuning up their building management systems,
looked at indoor air quality for healthier and more efficient buildings and operations. But just as important, and sometimes overlooked, was that just about everyone learned the value of leveraging virtual and hybrid experiences and how that'll be changing the way we work and how we use office space in the future. Great article. Next, shout out to this week's technology partner, iOffice, helping occupiers create responsive workplaces, everything through space planning, employee experience, and asset management SaaS solutions. So this article does a serious deep dive into the 9 corporate real estate metrics you should be tracking. And these are some of the corporate real estate metrics that really matter: cap rate, total occupancy cost, percentage of revenue, rent utilities and employee cost per square foot, space utilization, annual headcount by building, occupancy rates by floor, average service request response time, average check-in time. Kudos to Rebecca Simank at iOffice for a valuable article with some great takeaways. Also in the news, Garrison Architects is planning the world's first triple net zero building called the 76 in Albany, New York. Now, so triple net means energy, water, and waste. And in addition to be carbon neutral, it's also being designed as a showcase for affordable housing. It's going to have 242 units across almost 500,000 square feet. Sustainability is going to be woven throughout the project, and all energy for heating, cooling, lighting, and appliances generated from solar, wind, water installations, state-of-the-art stuff. Total water consumption, they claim, will be reduced to zero through modern water collection and filtering techniques. Waste is going to be recycled, composted, and incinerated. So we'll keep an eye on this project. Finally, a little news from Yardi. They just announced the acquisition of Forge, a UK-based software company. Their Forge Bluepoint product is a cloud-based solution that actually connects access control and allows companies to manage visitors flexibly and securely. So quoting Paul Spiria, co-founder of Forge, this is an exciting phase for Forge and our team, and we're greatly looking forward to the future and being part of Yardi's end-to-end technology offering. So unfortunately, I'm out of time for today. That's it for me. Check it out, and I'll see you next week.
You do such a great job. And you know, I was thinking while you were finishing up, let's invite all of our viewers to start sending in news. So anybody out there listening, if you've got an article that may not make the mainstream news or something that's coming that we need to be aware of, please send it to, just go to our website and send it to anybody up on our Contact Us page. It'll get to us, and we will include in the weekly news. That could be promotions of folks, acquisitions of companies, new product releases. We may not be able to include them all, but there's a good shot we can get it on the weekly news brief. So
as long as it's within the past week, we can.
Exactly. Yeah, we're looking at current news. Exactly. Yes. Howard, as always, great job. Thank you so much. All right. So before we close the show and talk a little bit about next week, let's hear from our final sponsor. All right. Again, I would like to say thank you to all of our sponsors. Great support from an incredible community. Special shout out to James Scott, the lead researcher at MIT Real Estate Innovation Lab. We're going to have James back. As you can tell, that conversation wouldn't end. Thank you to Howard for the news, Nancy, production team, for pulling off another great episode. And next week, well, we're going to continue the conversation. We've got Sunish Kashyap, the chief technology officer from that tiny little industrial real estate called Prologis. Actually, Prologis, the largest industrial real estate company in the world, but not just are they big, they remain one of the most innovative companies in this space. So it's going to be an exciting conversation with Sunesh, and I can't wait. And with that, we will see you next week. Have a great weekend, all. Be well.